Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome to the Dr. Hockey Podcast.
Welcome to the Dr. Hockey Podcast. I'm Dr. Jay Calvert, on with Jason Berkeley by Zoom. And we have a very special guest today. We have Bill Lindsay coming to us from Florida to talk to us about all things Florida Panthers, his career, and you know what's going on in the NHL with these playoffs coming up. How are you doing, Bill Lindsay?
Thanks for having me on. I'm doing well down here in South Florida. We had a nice 80-degree day down here, so everything's sunny and beautiful and getting ready for some playoff hockey.
Yeah.
And so, which hasn't happened in a while. So this team's been playing well and heading towards the right direction. And been a long time coming for these Panther fans. They've had some minor successes, but never had quite a team of this caliber. But the playoffs are going to be interesting. Interesting dynamic with the division they're in, the Central Division with Tampa Bay, Carolina, and who knows who gets that fourth spot. But it's going to be tough to get out of your division in advance. So some really good teams, but this Panther team is among one of the elites in the NHL. Finally,
Bill, how do you compare this team to the '96 team that got to the Cup Finals against Colorado? What do you see any similarities with these teams?
You have to have good team chemistry. They're starting to get together and believe in each other and really unselfish hockey. We had that back in '96. This team has got more talent as far as depth goes throughout their lineup with players like Barkov and players like Huberdeau. We had a really grinded out mentality, and we had some guys that could score some goals, but we worked extremely hard together as a group. And what it did in 96, with the way we were able to transform that and make a Stanley Cup run, was that we were able to just play for the man beside us became more important. And it was best explained to me by Scott Mellenby and Brian Scudland is, no, your success matters, but I've also got a family to feed at home, and my success, Matt, your success helps my success. So if I'm going to feed my family, I need you to play well. So it was really, you got worried about letting your teammate down if you played badly. And that really, really bonded that team because you saw how hard that team worked, the Scudlins, Lowry's, Mellenby's. I could go throughout the list, but everyone worked so extremely hard. And if you didn't have that kind of work ethic, you felt you were letting your teammates down. And that kind of bond, when you have that, then good teams become great. And you're starting to see that down here in South Florida with this group. They're starting to develop that chemistry. It's unselfish hockey. It's dedicated hockey. They're standing up for each other. And the off-season additions that Bill Zito made have really paid off. So there's some similarities back to 96. They're starting to really gel together and starting to have that team mentality. There's a little bit more talent on this group from what I saw in 96. So I'm excited to see what they can do in the playoffs. But bringing a player like Patrick Hornquist on board that won a couple of Stanley Cups was so important. He's integral in the locker room with what he brings every single day with his work ethic and everything off the ice. He stands up in the locker room if something needs to be said. That wasn't really around before. And we had a lot of that in 96 when Brian Scudlin and Mellenby and those players talked. You listened just because of the way they performed and acted on and off the ice. So they've got a commitment here and one of the best coaches ever to coach the game in Joel Quenneville. He's put this group together with a truncated training camp and no preseason. And they got off to the ground running. We got off to a hot start in 96, and that's what happened in this shortened season. The first 20 games became really important. And they got off to a really good start, and that helps you a lot when you can have some bumps in the road towards the end of the schedule, knowing that you're going to get in the playoffs. We had that in 96. I believe we lost 7 of 8 at one point down the stretch, and we still gained our confidence. So I see some similarities and just basically the team coming together and playing for each other, but just a little bit more talented group. This, to me, is the most talented team that we've ever had down here in South Florida.
I mean, it's pretty impressive because last year, you know, was not – I mean, obviously different players came in, but how the transformation from, you know, the team from last year to this year with just, you know, some key moves. And I think, obviously, you've mentioned, you know, Quenneville is he's a genius. I think it all is quite remarkable to see them standing up to Tampa Bay and really dominating a lot of the teams that like they are. It's impressive. And they had that talent. Barkov was there, Huberdeau. You know, the D has always been great, you know, in the last three or four years for Florida. But like, what a total turnaround in you know, over this the off season. It's incredible.
Yeah, Bill Zito, the general manager that come in, is probably going to be in the conversation for general manager of the year with what he accomplished in the offseason. You look at Radko Gudas, he brought an element of toughness that we didn't have on the defense position. Carter Verhaeghe, they brought Carter Verhaeghe in because of his underlying numbers, his analytic numbers in Tampa Bay. He was top of the league in puck battles won, even though he played a third and fourth line role and won a Stanley Cup. But he was a big-time scorer at the junior level and the minor league level. And they believed, given a chance in a top-six role here in South Florida, that he could produce those kind of numbers. And that's exactly what happened. Anthony DeClaire has been good. But if you go up and down the lineup, all the offseason signings that Bill Zito has made, Hornquist has been really good. And then he makes that trade at the deadline. Sam Bennett, so far in the first few games that he's played, has looked outstanding. So it's a really complete team. It's versatile. And once everyone gets healthy, hopefully towards the end of the playoffs, it's a team that's going to factor in. But it's quick, it's fast. And to have that's where Joel Quenneville came into place, was to have all these guys really gel quickly, right together, because the problem the Panthers had in the past was just trying to find line combinations that worked right out of the gate. And coming out of training camp, we had four lines that were together and played mostly together for the first 20 games, and there wasn't much moving around. So the chemistry was instantly there and got them off to that hot start, and they've been able to continue it. So it's a lot of good things have happened down here. The goaltending with Bobrovsky has been better. Chris Drieger in a backup role. It might not be a backup role for too much longer going into the playoffs, but his numbers have been elite. So it goes down Bill Zito, Joel Quenneville, and the Florida Panthers, the group. Barkov and Huberdeau needed an experience like this, and they're going to need a playoff experience like this, where they go toe-to-toe with the Carolina, where they go toe-to-toe with Tampa Bay after seeing them eight times in the regular season, maybe seven times in the playoffs, and they have to be on the national stage, on the spotlight, and they got to be able to produce to really see how good these players are.
Well, it's impressive. I think you're told Huberdeau has always been an impressive player to me, and he was unfortunately in the background because his team wasn't elevating him to the level that I think he's really capable of. This year, everybody can see him pretty. It's impressive, and he's got great numbers, but he's also just a super talented player. I mean, his vision for the ice and the hockey IQ of that guy is really off the charts.
It is. And that's, Jay, to your point there, but if you talk to it and you look at the players, and once the new players come in, when you get Huberdeau and Barkov, their ability to elevate the players around them. So if you're looking and you're trying to evaluate great players, it's what they do and what they do to the players around them. Barkov, you could put Barkov with anyone and they're going to have success. It's that kind of, and the same thing goes to Huberdeau. Huberdeau is, I don't believe he's awesome with all his talent, but Barkov still has a little higher ceiling with me to elevate the people around him just because of his 200-foot game, and should be in the Selke conversation this year and maybe win the Selke trophy finally. I believe he deserves that kind of credit. He's been that good for this team. But the greatest compliment you can give a player is to elevate the players around you. And just look at Sam Bennett. He comes in, gets put on a line with DeClaire and Huberdeau. Sam Bennett has 5 points in four games, three goals. And so all of a sudden, Calgary's probably, what happened to this kid? But it's Verhaeghe gets put on the line with Barkov right out of training camp, and Verhaeghe's never looked back. He's injured at this moment, but you get put with those star players, and it can really turn your game around. And that's why going out and getting players that maybe haven't succeeded elsewhere or playing in third and fourth, that's where Bill Zito has really found guys, knowing that he has players like Barkov and Huberdeau to insulate these guys and to really help them out and realize their true potential.
When you were playing those, I actually saw the playoff games in Pittsburgh when you guys beat the Penguins. I think it was a game seven, if I remember correctly. And I think you were pretty instrumental in shutting down Jágr and Lemieux. And it was tough. It was tough play. So when you look at the teams now, I mean, it was the game looked very different then, you know, to me as somebody in the stands. But I mean, from your standpoint, as you know, the guy that went through that playoff run to the Stanley Cup, what do you think the players, you know, this year it's a little different, obviously, because they've already played these teams a lot. So I think this year's a little bit of an anomaly for the first two rounds. But what do you think they have to be thinking right now as they're getting ready for the playoffs? What is their methodology or the approach to the fact that they're going to start off playing teams that they know out of the gates, and then all of a sudden they're going to get to go see a team that they've not seen in God knows how long? It's really something that I'm curious. What's the talk? How do you approach this?
Now, first off, seeing the team eight times during the regular season, once you get into the playoffs for those first two rounds, the hatred and visceral that you're going to your opponent is going to be off the charts. We saw it already with Carolina. They had two majors before the last game. They fought the last three games. And the last time they had games with back-to-back fighting majors, it was in our notes last night. You had to go back to 2016. And now they fought in three games in a row. So even Carolina, which doesn't fight a lot, is starting to drop the gloves, and you're starting to see teams kind of go back and forth. But as far as your approach towards the playoff goes as a player, once you get to this part of the season and you realize you get there, I've always translated that there's the regular season, then the real season. And the real season is the playoffs. So once you have a childhood dream of to get into the NHL, once you get into the NHL and you become established, you only have one other dream, and that's to win a Stanley. And if I look back at my career, the only regret is not having my name on the Stanley Cup, because it does hurt to look back and not realize that dream, because you look forward to it so much. But being in those playoffs, being on that run in 96, there is nothing like the Stanley Cup playoffs. And to be in it, engaged in those battles, and the way that your body hurts, but hurts in a good way, and you have to get up and you have to go at it and do it again. And there's ice packs and massage trainers everywhere. And once you get back into the later rounds, you look up and you're on national TV. I remember once we got to the semifinals and the final, it was an amazing experience when we got to Colorado for the Stanley Cup finals, and you got USA Today, and you, back then when everyone read a newspaper, you picked up on your doorstep in the morning at the hotel to go through the hockey. There was no hockey, but just you and Colorado. So it's that you get, and then when you're in the semifinals, you're the only ones on TV. The whole world is watching you from a hockey standpoint, and you really kind of grasp that. You're like, wow, all of Canada is watching us. All of US is watching us. This is the greatest it was the greatest experience I've ever lived through. And that's what the playoffs are for. And that's why it's so hard to win that Stanley Cup. So that's what the players are thinking about right now. They're just trying to live out that dream. And it's a war of attrition just to try and get across that finish line, because your body takes a beating all the way through. But it's to me, it's the greatest to be on that stage, and to have that is a chance of a lifetime. And it only comes around so often. You don't know when it's ever going to come back again, when you're ever going to get that opportunity. So if you do have a chance, you got to latch onto it and make the most you can of it.
Well, you actually have a bit of an anniversary coming up. April 27th, we're going to age all of us right here. 25 years ago, you scored the game-winning goal to let the Panthers win their first playoff series ever. So it's coming up next week, the anniversary. So it's a pretty interesting 25th anniversary celebration there. You got to have to honor it in some fashion.
Actually, know the date. So April 27th, I'll make that. Yeah. But thanks for reminding me. One of the great moments of my life, and scoring that goal. And to me, the treasure of it all was that was my first time into the playoffs, and we made it all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. And that was one of the first times my parents made it down to Miami to watch me play in person. and it was in that playoff game and got to see that goal. So when you get to the NHL, the army of people, everyone, to realize the dream of getting to the NHL or winning a Stanley Cup, the commitment that it takes from so many people, your parents, your coaches, your trainers, your friends, it really takes a lot to just for you to realize your dream. And those people don't always get enough credit along the way. And so when I look back at making the NHL, the stuff my parents had to go through, the grind that they had to go through, all the coaches that I had that taught me everything, the valuable lessons, the teammates that I was lucky enough to play with, that I gathered a little bit from each and every step along the way. And then you add your own little hard work into it, and all of a sudden you're able to reach the NHL. And that's the same thing with the Stanley Cup. If you're to win a Stanley Cup, it goes beyond the players on the ice, the coach, the GM, the trainers, the fans. It's all a part of it. And it's truly, it's that's what makes hockey to me and team sports the greatest thing, because you can't do it alone. You just need so much help to get anywhere that you want and to succeed. And along those ways, there's going to be all kinds of failure too. You're going to fail a lot, and you might fail in the playoffs a lot before you finally have success. So you just, it's really learning. Life is about overcoming failures and just keep going forward until you realize your dreams. And if you never quit, that's what makes those things possible.
Bill, quick question for you though. So, you know, you played for a few teams, including Quebec, who I believe you were drafted by.
Correct.
Panthers, Calgary Flames, San Jose Sharks, Montreal Canadiens. And then also the Thrashers, who are obviously no longer with us. But what is it about Florida that brought you back to the Panthers? What is it about this team, the organization, the area? Because obviously you're from a colder climate where you were born. I guess, was it North Dakota, I believe, or
British Columbia, actually, and Montana.
Okay, so it's still not necessarily balmy up there per se.
Columbia. I had a cabin in Montana. I split, but. I actually had my hockey part in British Columbia and spent a lot of my time growing up in Montana.
So what brought you back to Florida? What was the affinity for the area there to be a commentator there and everything else? What was so special about it for you?
So getting drafted by the Quebec Nordiques was a great experience. Getting there, getting my foot in the door in the NHL, got left unexposed in the expansion draft, and then came down here to South Florida. Didn't know what to expect. Didn't know if I was going to make the team. And there was Roger Nielsen, my first coach here, was the best coach that I ever had as far as teaching me the game and moving me in the right direction. So, and getting off, and all of a sudden, when it did hit midwinter and it was 80 degrees outside, I just fell in love with that kind of the hockey. I experienced Montreal and Calgary, as you touched on, and those were fun and exciting times. I'm glad I got to see those markets and what it was like to be under the microscope and get all the attention. But I did love the weather. I'm not going to lie. I liked going out and putting my flip-flops on and going to the rink. The fan base here, and when we got started, was so unique that I still got a lot of fans from those early days that became friends. I became friends with fans down here. We had such a tight base and tight group that became a lot, and friends, and I was part of the community. And to follow it up, I just felt this is where I belonged. And that's pretty much why I just wanted to stay down here and make it my home. It's somewhere that, going on that run in 96, the team was the one that I, of all the teams that you mentioned that I play with, was the one that I identified the most with. Right. So for those many reasons, just, it was just right when I got here from Quebec, I just fell in love with the beach, going to the rink, the atmosphere, and the sunny days. To me, going to the rink when it was 80 degrees out and going to the arena and having that sunlight, it energized me. It pumped me up. I was like, this is the greatest thing in the world. You go into the rink, it's 80 degrees out, and you're going to wake up tomorrow, and if you're sore, you're going to go down and put your toes in the sand and maybe swim in the ocean. And it was, and the fans too, just the first four or five years down here were absolutely crazy, absurd. It was through the charts what was going on in the city, the way they embraced us. And that's why I want to see this team get back and be successful, because it's been so many years. But those first 5-6 years were so electrifying with the fan base, with the team, the teammates too that I played with along that spin were taught me the most, meant the most to me, and became some of my greatest friends. So that's, you put that all together, and that's why I wanted to come back here down to South Florida.
That's great.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, that, I think a lot of that happens in these nice climates. I mean, I think everybody who's played for the Ducks lives within 25 miles of the Anaheim Stadium, of the Honda Center. And, you know, same with the Kings. They're, everybody's still over in Manhattan Beach. They don't leave. Once they get a taste of that, they're like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah, it's tough to pass up. I had, when I got traded from here to Calgary, it took me about 3 weeks before I could put socks on. I always used to go on my flip flops. So my first couple of weeks in Calgary, I still just would put my feet in with no socks on into my boots and go, because I was so used to, I was sore in the morning. I had a bad back and sore, it was tough to bend down. So it was nice always just to put the flip flops. So getting to Calgary, getting in that cold weather, it took me some time to adjust.
Oof. Yeah. That is a radically different climate.
Yeah. There's no flipping or flopping over there.
No. Just some Chinook winds that roll through every now and again.
Right.
Brutal. Well, tell us what you're up to lately. You're doing some commentating. How's your, you know, your life in terms of your interaction with the Panthers now?
It's great. With, as far as the Panthers go, the radio, doing the radio broadcast, I've done the TV broadcast, done side work, sideline reporting, pre and post game reporting. And now the opportunity opened up at the NHL Network to go up there and broadcast games here still on radio. And they allow me to take some games off here and there to go up to the NHL Network. So it was a good opportunity to do that. And I've loved my experience at the NHL Network. And down here, I'm involved with whatever they ask for me to do in the community. That's a big part why you said why I like it down here. I always still touch base with the fans, and I do learn to play hockey clinics for kids 5 to 9 years old every weekend at all 6-7 hockey rinks we have down here, all the way from Kendall, which is pretty much past Miami, almost getting down to the Florida Keys, all the way up to West Palm Beach. Wow. So go to all the rinks and coach the little kids, and I have a blast with it. And stay in touch and do the community, the radio. I love broadcasting. It's falling into that. After my playing career, it's become a dream job from that standpoint, and running up to the NHL Network in Jersey a couple of times a month to do that has offered a different perspective, and they've been really good up there to me. So it's just, it's really, it's still really enjoyable to go to the rink. But the only difference is now that I'm a fan now. That's right. You watch the games and you're like, why can't this guy, what happened to that guy tonight? Why, he was terrible. I mean, you become a real good hockey player when you're sitting way up high. And you're not playing everything. You're like, Why didn't he make that pass? That was so easy. I try it, but you become a real big, it's hard when you don't have control. When you're on the ice and you have control of everything, now you're a fan of the hockey team, of the Panthers, and you kind of feel what the fans go through when the team loses and when the team wins. That's what's been so exciting for me, being down here for so long and witnessing, as I touched on, those early success we had, to see the success now is thrilling. And just to see it come back slowly, gradually, get the fans back and excited about hockey down here in South Florida, and there's a market for it here. It's South Florida sports. You have to win. That's just the bottom line, and winning is paramount, and they're doing it this year. But that's what I'm doing now with the Panthers. I've been with them now from the start and had some off years, played for other teams and went to Germany for a while, but back, and to be afforded the job to come back and work with them was probably the second best opportunity I could get besides playing hockey. It was coming back and broadcasting for the team that I really built my career around and dreamed of playing for. So to come back and do that role is a lot of fun down here in South Florida. So it's been a blast.
That's great.
Well, what do you think is going to happen with the playoff runs? I mean, what are your give us your division winners from each division?
Up north, Toronto, Winnipeg might push them a little bit, but Toronto seems to be the elite team. There's some question marks in goal around Toronto. Jack Campbell looked like Anderson skating a little bit, but if their goaltending holds up in Toronto, they're the deepest team, the forwards, defenseman wise. Winnipeg's pretty good, very talented up front. Connor Hellebuyck, he might be able to make a difference in this series. The defenseman in Winnipeg, not quite as good. And then the Oilers, they just have to play their top players too much. I don't think that can hold out. I mean, McDavid's playing 27, 28 minutes a night. You have to do that. I believe you can shut them down. If you go to the East, that's the one division that's kind of a pick 'em for me. It's between the Islanders and the Washington Capitals, and you got Boston in that group, and who else I'm missing?
Pittsburgh,
yeah. So Pittsburgh. So out of that group, it's really tough. Washington's the oldest team in the NHL, but they look maybe to be the most serious threat to come out of there. And Pittsburgh, again, whatever. Mike Sullivan does a heck of a coaching job every year. And when you got Sidney Crosby, you've always got a chance. But I would pick Washington in that division. And then if you go over there, the best matchups are going to be in the first and second rounds, unfortunately. If you go over into that Western division there and you look at Vegas and Colorado having to play each other, those are two. That's going to be the final in that, unless there's a train wreck somewhere. But in Colorado going toe-to-toe. Vegas, to me, is really good, big, strong, fast, and then Colorado has it all. Colorado, to me, looks to be the best team in the NHL, and I'll have to give them a little bit of an edge. And then in our division, we played Carolina last night. That's a tough out. And what does Tampa Bay look like in the playoffs when Kucherov, and they circumvent the salary cap, and Kucherov comes back and Stamkos is healthy? After taking a 10-game break, they're going to be a different team and defending Stanley Cup champions, and we're in that mix. So I'd like to say us, but that's an epic battle if you get through those teams. So if you watch the playoffs this year, the final semifinals and finals are going to be great, but the matchups in the first and second rounds, if you go back to the old-fashioned 1-8 seeding, are nothing compared to what you're seeing now with this 1-4-2-3. Throughout the divisions, the first and second rounds, plus with what seeing teams 8-9 times, is they're going to be bloodbaths. And if you want must see TV, watch those first two rounds of the NHL playoffs.
I have to add something and interject one thing. My Red Wings are no longer the worst team in the Central.
Yeah,
I want to say that right now for the record, we're no longer the worst.
There you go, Jacob Vrana, four goals. Yeah,
four goals last night.
Trust in Steve Yzerman, what he did with that Mantha trade and getting all the draft picks, you know that he's rebuilt through the draft. So you had to, after 25 straight years in the playoffs, you can't complain too much in Detroit. If you have a few down years, you're going to rebuild it back up. Steve Yzerman will build that team back up. It might take a year or two, but he'll draft well. And you just have to see the way that Tampa Bay drafted over the years. And get back.
I'm constantly complaining. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about your Red Wings. After 25 straight years, a few bumpy years, you guys will be okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're not in last place anymore. So
we got that going. Well, actually, today they just said that Dylan Larkin's out for the season.
Is he?
Tyler Bertuzzi's out for the season. I mean, they got a majority of their top players are out for the season. So. It's, you know, it's okay. I mean, we'll come back next year. But, yeah, we had that first rounder from Washington and a second rounder next year. So that's
great, great trade.
It was. I mean,
Brown is a good player, and Mantha, yeah, big. It's inconsistent, but he'll get washed. But you need those draft picks back. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next couple of years there in the Motor City. Fun. Dylan Larkin to me is a great captain. He plays the same way every night and plays hard. So you got some pieces and just have to build around it.
Yep.
Well, you know, we've had Pat Brisson on a few times, and he talks about Jacob Vrana, like, you know, the potential for that kid is very, very, you know, it's immense. And he saw him as an elite player. And I think I think he was on a team where he didn't really have the freedom to fly, you know, the way he wanted to. So maybe the Red Wings might be the spot for him to really shine.
Well, he never got power play time in Washington, really. So that's a big problem with a lot of guys. You take it too here. You look at Vincent Trocheck couldn't fit on our first power play unit here. And then he goes to Carolina's on the first power play unit, gets extra ice time. Not to say that's the whole thing. He was dealing with injuries, but
that ankle injury was bad when he had it too.
Yeah, he really hurt that ankle bad. But when you get that power play time, and if Verona, a player that if you put him on the first power play unit, that's if you play well, that's in an 82 game schedule. It's an extra 20 points a year if you're on the first day, and people don't really understand that all the time. But if you're on that first power play unit, it's pretty much you can just put 20 points right in the bank right off the start of the season. So if Verona gets that extra power play time, the numbers at even strength this year. I looked at his numbers the other day. I believe only 3 points on the power play. So this year. So that extra, if he gets some extra power play time in Detroit, he might make the most of it.
Well, who do you think is going to win the Stanley Cup? If you have to throw the dart at the board and hit one team, who is it? Who's winning?
Colorado. Everyone talked about him in the preseason before, and the favorite. And if Grubauer comes back, gets over this COVID, Devan Dubnyk's capable backup goaltender. I was on NHL Network the other day and said they're the one team that's capable of winning the Stanley Cup with average goaltending. They're that good. That you look at the shot disparity that they have. They're first in the NHL in shots for and first in the NHL in shots against. Wow. They outshoot teams 45-25. It's just they spend the whole time down in the other team's end. And Makar and Sammy Girard doesn't get talked about, and Bowen Byron when he's their defense. They have, I believe I was looking at 130 points or something from their defensemen. So you add that all up with and their second and third lines are dominant in their own right, and that first line might be the best line in the NHL. So it's really, really hard to pick against Colorado. It's just hard to see any team challenge them for that. We'll see what happens, but they have to be the legitimate pick. They were for many at the start of the year, and I don't believe it much has changed.
Yeah, I mean, last year when they were rolling into the playoffs, they had way too many injuries. They couldn't make it happen. But
yeah, this year they're healthy. Yeah, who's healthy in the playoffs?
Yeah. Well, Bill, listen, we really appreciate you taking the time to jump on with us. This is great.
Hey, but I got Jason's team. Who's your team?
Good question. Go ahead, Jason. You can tell.
So, Jay, okay, this is what we've been able to piece together with clues and different innuendos over the years. So Jay was born in New Jersey, not a Devils fan, was a Rangers fan as he grew up, went to Pittsburgh for training, then ditched the Rangers for the Penguins, and is now a Penguins fan, but somehow is now a fan of 28 other teams and loves all those teams. I still can't put it all together.
That is not true. So my team,
I've been using the Pythagorean theorem to try to figure it out and the Y equals MX plus B, but I still can't come up with anything other than the Penguins.
that's not too bad. Listen. I also, Jay, you got to tell me there's nicer places in New Jersey besides Secaucus, because that's what and I love going up there, but that's the only place that I've ever been in New Jersey. And they tell me it's a beautiful state. So you please tell me it is true, because Secaucus is okay, but it's not the prettiest place in the world.
Dude, listen, Secaucus is one of the nastiest places you've ever been. It's the worst. I can't even imagine. The only reason they put it there is because nobody else would go there, I guess. But if you drive out west and go to where I grew up in a place called Milburn Township or Short Hills, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Beautiful area. If you get out to Basking Ridge, you go south to, there's amazing places like Cherry Hill, Princeton. New Jersey is actually really, really beautiful out in Sparta, Upper Saddle River. There are these amazing towns. But where you are, if you're going to Secaucus, that is the reason that New Jersey is known as the armpit of America. Right there. That's it.
I'll, I get a chance, I'm going to take a tour of New Jersey. It's called the Garden State for a reason, so I'm going to take a tour around there. I like the Penguins beanie now that we got going that we're rocking here. So
this is my operating room hat. So I wear this into surgery every day.
I have one too, actually.
good for you guys. Well, for all you guys do on the front lines for us and doing all that stuff. You guys make it happen during these tough times.
Well, it's been an interesting time being a physician during COVID, but you know, we've been able to keep ourselves safe, take care of our patients, and you know, it's a new world, that's for sure. I think a lot of advances are going to come out of this that are probably going to have some positive impacts on the health of the world going forward. So it's awful what's happened, but you know, we always see it as an opportunity to learn and be better for next time. So
a bit of a wake up call for sure.
Yeah. Well, you guys are, I mean, there's heroes on the ice and hockey, but behind the scenes, that's a lot where it's at. So that's where you guys are. So thanks. I want to say thank you for you guys and everyone that's behind the scenes doing all the hard lifting.
Well, Bill, you know, you mentioned, you know, when to get you to the pros, it took your friends, your family, your parents, I mean, all kind of like a village to kind of help that. That's very similar to what Jay and I had to go through when it came to our med school and internship, yep, residency and fellowship and everything. It's everyone around you that kind of helps come together to help you out. So there's a lot of parallels between what we do and what you do as well. So it's you can't do it by yourself. That's for sure.
That's what I call it's called chasing dreams. You know, if you want to chase dreams in your life, that's what you need. You need, and you can't quit, and you got to go, because if you can settle sometimes, if you fail a lot of people just say, okay, just pack it in. But if you got the army of people around you to support you and you never quit, then whatever you want to do in life, I believe is possible. And you can become a doctor, you can become an NHL player, whatever your dreams are. If you get the people around you, keep pushing and do the hard work on your own, then you realize dreams, and it's some of the greatest stuff in the world.
You're right.
Absolutely. Well, you've only lost if you stop fighting for it. So you just,
that's correct. You
keep pushing for it.
That's right. We'll get through this COVID, and on the other side, we'll have full buildings eventually here with 20,000 screaming fans again. So can't wait till that day comes.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to be, I'm actually coming out to Miami soon for a scientific meeting. And I don't know what that's going to be like. It'll be unique. I mean, I haven't been in a situation like that where I'm going to be in rooms with a lot of people. I mean, I went to the Ducks game over the weekend, and that was pretty odd, but the Golden Knights did a clinic for the Ducks on how to score goals. And it was pretty impressive, but there were probably 2,000 fans there, and it was fun.
Cool. Well, if you want to come to a game, you got my info. Let me know.
It'd be great.
I think I'll do that. I'll be there. I don't know if there's any, I'll look at the schedule, but I would love to do that, Bill.
Yeah. Well, we finish May 11th, then the playoffs start May 16th around then. So if you're in, hopefully we're in it mid June. So if you're in it around May to mid June, anytime in there, hopefully we're still hockey.
Well, I appreciate it. And we definitely appreciate you coming on to talk about all the great things that are going on with the Panthers. And we hope they go deep into the playoffs and get to the cup. That would be awesome to see.
All right. I appreciate it, guys. It was fun.
All right, Bill. Thanks so much.
Nice to meet you. All right. Take care.
Take care. See ya. What's up, Shahab?
What's up, guys? What's up, Jason? How you doing?
What's going on?
Sorry we didn't get your Sharks in there and talk about Patrick Marleau.
I heard a little bit of Sharks with Bill Lindsay, and that was enough for me. I'll take it. That's the best we'll do this year.
When did you get those?
What?
Your earrings. When did you get those?
Oh, I got like a month ago.
What was the reason? Just
quarter life crisis, maybe. Like, wanted some change. My mom didn't talk to me for like a week. She's like, "Are you gay? What's wrong with you?" I was like, "I don't know. I'm sorry." But it's fun.
Maybe you're a pirate.
I'm a Raider fan, so that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, Pirates have earrings. It's kind of the deal.
I'll take it.
I like
my little Jack Sparrow.
I think it looked good.
Thank you.
I agree.
Thank you, guys.
I've been thinking about getting some ink. I don't know what I would get, though.
Are you being serious or are you joking?
No, I'm serious. I was thinking about getting like a rib tattoo on my ribs since I take so many ribs out of people.
Yeah, I thought about getting one too, a tattoo, but I know for me with my skin, I'll probably break out and like get into getting a necrotizing fasciitis. I know it.
You won't. It's not that bad, I promise.
I know. Trust me, I will. Something will happen to me.
If you get a Red Wings tattoo, it'll be worth it, though.
I thought about it. I thought about getting a Red Wings tattoo on one arm and getting like a Jewish star on the other or something like that. Mm-hmm. But then I quickly said, you know what? I'm going to have a problem.
You could have necrotizing fasciitis.
It's going to happen. If it's going to happen to someone with a tattoo, it'll happen to me.
John, you got to put that into the podcast. That's too funny. Big things going on in Florida. I think the Panthers may have a shot.
Yeah, no, Bill was great. It was great hearing his take on things. And he answered the question perfectly as far as, you know, why he has the affiliation for Florida as opposed, or, you know, such an affinity for Florida and the team as opposed to any of the other teams he played on, which is great. And obviously, you know, when you have great success, that's what you kind of gravitate to. But interestingly enough, and I forgot to mention this, he was in the same draft as our friend Sean Pronger.
Oh, no way. I didn't know that.
In 1991 draft, he was in the same draft. But I want to point out a couple things real quick. Just for put things in perspective, he did play with Patrick Marleau, I believe, at one point, who, as you know, just set the record for games. So in the 1991 NHL entry draft, these were the selections. So just see if any of these names happen to ring a bell, Jay. Eric Lindros, Scott Niedermeyer, Aaron Ward, Peter Forsberg, Patrick Pilon, Martin Lapointe, Brian Rolston, Philip Boucher, Alexei Kovalev, Marcus Naslund. I mean, this is Ray Whitney, Ziggy Palfy. I mean, these are big names. Sandis Ozilinch.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the list goes on and on and on of these guys in this draft. Joseph Stumpel. I mean, you know, it's pretty impressive, the talent that came out of that one draft.
Alexei Kovalev was one of my favorite players to watch. He's so amazing.
Chris Osgood, Ozzy, but at number 51 was Sean Pronger, got drafted by Vancouver.
There you go.
So let's see who else came out of that draft.
We're going to get Sean back on. We got to get his take on this.
Alexei Zhitnik.
Oh, yeah, he was good.
Zach Boyer. So, I mean, there's some, you know, really good names and you know, Bill Lindsay, I mean, some classic. Well, we just talked to him, was number 103. But I mean, there's some great, great players came out of this draft. So pretty impressive.
I remember Bill Lindsay manhandling the Penguins in that seventh game because my brother and I went there expecting a Penguins win to advance in the next round. And the Panthers just put the kibosh on that. And he was a big part of that.
Well, there you go. But that was great. It was great to get the perspective on Florida. We don't talk about the Florida Panthers enough, but I personally also think that a huge part of it, not just the fact that they have obviously great talent, but it starts also with coaching. I mean, Quinville, I mean, the fact that he was let go by Chicago and then I don't know what they're thinking.
Listen, we're not in the room. We don't know what's going on with that.
You're absolutely right about that.
Well, thanks for jumping on for this call with Bill. It was awesome. And yeah. I'm looking forward to what's going to happen as we wind down the season coming into the playoffs. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, this is the Dr. Hockey Podcast signing off with your prescription for the NHL.
Thanks for listening to Dr. Hockey. Check out new episodes every Thursday and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or at podcastone.com.